Hello and welcome in.
First Science.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Well, good morning. Spring is here, the days are getting longer, and it is getting a whole lot lighter. You are listening to Science Mixtape on Soho Radio, and this week we're going to be looking at light and how it's one of the most important scientific tools for understanding what things are made of. I'm talking, of course, about spectrometry. And here to help us shine a light, pun intended, on this fascinating topic is Dr. Robert Thompson, Research Fellow at the London Centre for Nanotechnology and at the Electrical Engineering Department at UCL. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
For any listeners that have no idea what I'm talking about, could you tell us in, you know, a couple of sentences what spectrometry is?
Yeah, sure. So very basically, spectrometry is, or spectroscopy is looking at how light interacts with matter. So all matter has different frequencies that it looks at, and that depends and changes the colour that it interacts with. And we look at which colour it's interacting with and see what that tells us about the material.
And we are going to be hearing what exactly we can learn from those materials and coming up how they're going to relate to the future of electronics later in the show. We're also going to be making our own DIY spectrometer. And all you need if you want to take part at home is a cereal box or a shoebox, an old CD and some tin foil, as well as like scissors and tape and stuff. I've gone for bran flakes this morning. A good solid brand, I feel. Yeah, don't really have any other comments to say about my brand plate choice. And then finally, our question for you for this show, which you can tweet us at Soho Radio, is what type of light can't you see? It's a little bit of a trick question because it has more than one answer. So bonus points if you can think of more than one light that we can't see. We'll be revealing a clue later in the show and the answer at the end. Now, Robert, today is your mixtape. What song have you gone for first and why?
Okay, so I've picked, first of all, the band Hertz and gone for Some Kind of Heaven. And the reason for that is that's the most recent gig I've been to see, so I thought we'd kick off with that. They're quite a good band that I enjoy, but they're not that. They seem to be more popular over in Europe than they are a UK band. You might have heard them. They're on the background for Made in Chelsea, I think, quite a bit, though. That's not why I know of them.
I know we're so young, but I swear you're the one for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew it right from the start.
Just some kind of heaven, that's all that I need. I found it in you, I found it in you. You're some kind of heaven, that's all that I need. I found it in you, you're too good to be true. You got me singing, baby.
By studying the light spectrum of a star, scientists can work out its chemical makeup, temperature, and direction of travel.
That's pretty incredible. I mean, stars are so far away, and the fact that we can study, like, learn that about them just by analysing the light they give off, I think it's amazing. What got you into spectroscopy in the first place?
So, I think spectroscopy is something I probably fell into when I got into science, but I was always interested in optics and light, and that's going through from being at sixth form in college and school and being interested in drama, and I kind of fell into working with the technical side of it, so all the lighting, how do these different types of lamps create different shapes on the stage, how do you change the
colour?
And
different moods as well, they're so important in drama.
Yeah, so important in drama, and it's all kind of science and technology that allows you to be able to do that, so I found that very interesting, and then I was quite good at science and physics, so I decided if you're good at it, why not go and do it at university, and hopefully if you're good at something, you can end up doing it well in your career or wherever you end up.
Yeah, it's the dream, if you're good at it and you like it.
Yeah,
so
I thought
I'd
go, and then it was the optics side of things in the physics degree that interested me, and that just kind of naturally led down this route, and then I realised that perhaps the fundamentals of physics is not quite what interests me as much. I prefer more of an applied study. So applying it to something was brilliant, because spectroscopy, it entails all of those bits of physics that I enjoy, but also I can apply it to so many different areas of technology development and science and looking at materials. And you really get to understand what these materials are made of just by looking at the light that interacts with them.
Yeah, so let's unpack this a little bit more. How exactly does it work?
Okay, so light is interesting to start with because white light is made up of a huge array of colours, and you can tune the colour of the light that you're looking at, and that tells you something about the energy there.
Okay, so when you say you can tune it, so we've all seen rainbows, and we've all seen the kind of the fact that white light can be split by the water droplets or a prism, like on the Pink Floyd album.
Yes.
But what do you mean that we can tune it to a particular type of light?
Okay, so I guess the best thing to do here, we're on radio, so the best way to describe this would perhaps be with an audio analogy. But light is made up of lots of different wavelengths or frequencies, and that tells you the colour. The same way that if you think about music, you can have lots of different notes, and that's exactly the same. In music, the wavelength of a note or the sound tells you what note you're listening to, so you can change that. And if you listen to an orchestra, you have all sorts of different notes going in there, but you can pick out different frequencies, and that's the same with light. You can have white light with all sorts of different wavelengths in there, but you can actually, if you split them, you can look at the red or the blue, which can correspond to different transitions in those materials.
I'm just going to bring up our orchestra sound effect.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Excellent. So even though we in the studio can't see this orchestra playing, it's been recorded, you at home can't hear it, see this orchestra here playing, we can hear it, and just by listening to the different frequencies in there and the different tones, you can tell which instruments are in there. So you can quite clearly hear that, is it a cymbal or something?
Yeah, it's a ping.
Yeah, and you can hear the different strings going on in there. We've got some woodwind, and you can hear the different types of woodwind. So that's quite high, I imagine that's a flute that we're listening to there, which you could... You can tell just by listening to it, that's not the same as a clarinet or the little big long flute,
bassoon.
The large flute, the bassoon. And that's because you're listening to the different frequencies. So I have here, say, an array of different wine glasses in front of me. And if I just tap this one, and then if I tap this one...
So listeners at home, that they were two different sizes. Which one was bigger and which one was smaller?
Yeah, so I'll hit them again if we start with this one. So, although you can't see this at home, all you've got is the sound that you're listening to, you can actually tell me something about those two materials that we just hit, those two objects.
Yeah.
You can easily tell which one is smaller, and that's going to be the one that's a higher pitch. So that's smaller than this one.
And we can almost tell it's made of glass, because if you were hitting something metallic, it would make a completely different sort of tone.
Yes, yeah, it would make a different tone. The resonant frequency, so that... The resonant frequency tells you what wavelength these want to vibrate, and it tells you the size of it will change its resonant frequency. Also, the material will change its resonant frequency.
And the resonant frequency is something that every object has. It's like a fingerprint.
Essentially, yes. The resonant frequency is what that object or that material wants to oscillate at. And in molecules, we have what we call transition energies. And that is, if I want to give this molecule some light, I shine some white light at it, which energy is that molecule going to absorb? And that corresponds to, in our light, in our glasses here, essentially the same as the resonant frequency. So the same way that we listen to an orchestra and we shut our eyes and we can tell by the frequencies we hear that there's a violin in there, there's a piccolo, there's a flute. If we look up into space, we can't get up there and look at the molecules that are up there, or the materials that are up there. But by looking at the light that's coming down and looking at the different colours that we see, we can learn what materials are up there.
Because different materials will be emitting different light frequencies.
They'll be emitting different light frequencies and they'll be absorbing different light frequencies. So when we talk about absorption, that's kind of... You've all seen the thing online where, or on a video where an opera singer starts...
Singing
at a very high frequency and suddenly the glass
smashes.
Are you
going to do us a demonstration?
I would love to be able to do you a demonstration on that. Unfortunately, I was worried that I might smash the glass over your studio.
Oh, yeah, it's probably not good for the health and safety of Soho Radio.
Yeah, but that's essentially that the singer has just hit the correct wavelength that that glass absorbs. So if you were to have hundreds of singers singing lots of different notes, you wouldn't actually be able to hear that singer because the glass had absorbed all that light. And it's the same with spectroscopy. If we've got a big bright sun behind some molecules that we want to look at, you won't be able to see the wavelength as well as the other ones that it absorbs because that molecule is taking in that light.
Taking on all the light. Yeah. In the same way that black objects don't reflect light because they've absorbed all of it, and a yellow object only reflects yellow light.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is your second song and why?
So the second song I've gone for is by Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, and I'm a saxophone player. The sax player in the E Street Band, I just am in awe of. That's what I wanted to be when I was younger and I grew up. And we've gone for Hungry Heart. It's not an amazing sax part, but it's very present within the piece, so that's why I've gone for this.
Spectroscopic analysis has been crucial in the development of the most fundamental theories in physics, including quantum mechanics, the special and general theories of relativity, and quantum electrodynamics.
That all sounds incredibly impressive. But almost more than that, and something that I think is more relevant to us and the listeners, it's been used in loads and loads of kind of technologies here, like not just theories, hasn't it?
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's used all over the place in all sorts of different areas of science and technology and medicine. One thing I was reading about just the other day was how they use it in forensics, because when you die, morbid point, but
it's going to happen to all of us one day.
Yeah, your bone stops becoming as moist, and when something stops becoming as moist, it absorbs different amounts of light at different intensities. So what they do is they can shine infrared light at a bone and they can tell how long ago you died. So they can use it in forensics to work out a time of death by looking at how the reflection changes, and that tells you how much water's missing, and therefore you can work back and work out when this person actually died.
That's so cool. So next time we're watching Happy Valley or The Killing or CSI Miami,
yeah,
look out for the spectroscopy going on.
Yeah, using the same idea as well. You can look at cancer cells, because cancer cells absorb different amounts of light. So there's a special part of the spectrum.
Compared to normal cells, healthy cells.
Compared to healthy cells, because they have different amounts of water, they absorb different amounts of different wavelengths of light. So if we talk about a wavelength of light, which is actually quite new to the kind of toolbox that we have, it's called terahertz light, mm-hmm. which sits just between infrared and microwaves.
If anyone has been was here at the top of the show when we asked you our audience question, there have been some interesting clues just dropped there by Dr. Robert Thompson.
Yes,
pay attention.
There were. So this new, it's not a new area of light, because light's always been there, but it's an area that we're starting to be able to use more. And when you shine this at a cancer cell, the moisture inside the cancer cell absorbs more terahertz light than other cells. So what they can use this for is for identifying where cancer cells are. And they've done this in mice and actually been able to image cancer cells growing
within mice. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm guessing like completely safe and non-invasive way of imaging.
Yeah, that's the idea. It would work for skin cancer and things near the surface. It would be less useful for things deeper within the body if you're using it non-invasively.
Oh, but I suppose you could also just do like a keyhole surgery, endoscope type thing.
I'm not going to claim to be an expert on how it could be implemented, but yeah, you can imagine things like that being developed.
It's
where
exciting.
You could send it down on a fiber optic, which could go just, you know, basically down a needle, and you could look at it that way.
Yeah, and producer Yaz saw a story where they were using spectroscopy as an app in your iPhone to look at your blood.
Yeah, it's fascinating, like the way that the technology can be made, you know, so small that you can literally use it in your home maybe in the future, and the diagnostic implications of that are incredible, like being able to do a test on yourself in your own home.
Yeah,
and it just
normally needs a whole lab.
You need a whole lab to do it. Exactly.
No, I mean, as we'll find out a bit later, actually what you need to create a spectrometer is very little at all.
Yeah, yes. It allows such complex analysis of something. That's what's
yes,
that's
yeah,
simple.
Yeah, yeah.
And you are actually working on inorganic, no, organic materials, let me get that right, that can be used in electronics.
Yeah, so the main thing that I use my spectroscopy for is to look at materials for the future of technology. And organic materials...
That is very cool.
Yeah, yeah, I like it as well. Organic materials are specifically what I look at. And what do I mean by an organic material? That is a material which is based on hydrogen and carbon. So if you think about your conventional view of what electronics are made of, they're generally made of silicon and metals.
Yeah, like iron and copper and gold.
Yeah, not very flexible materials.
No.
If you now take it and you start thinking about hydrogen and carbon-based materials, what we're actually talking about there is plastics. So another word for organic electronics is plastic electronics, or printable electronics. And the printable electronics is the bit that makes them quite interesting as well, because now you've got... organic materials, which are essentially plastics, which are soluble, so they can be processed within liquids and you can start printing them. And this gets extremely interesting when you think about the applications of what that means for production and producing these types of technologies. So I want you to imagine a factory now that's making TVs, a current factory making inorganic, so silicon-based TVs, and you've got a big conveyor belt going along, you've got lots of robots arms,
yeah, like putting little bits together.
Exactly. Now I want you to completely dispel that. Shatter your current world view on how TVs and electronics...
Bulldozed it down, it's gone.
Okay, and now I want you to think of a printing press, so a newspaper printing press. You've got...
The paper coming in, something stamps on it, and it whooshes off.
Yeah, exactly. That's how organic electronics are going to allow you to create TVs and the future of technology, because everything is now going to be solubly processed and it can be compatible with flexible substrates. So that means you can have things like flexible pieces of plastic which run along, and then you have an inkjet printer that prints down your transistors, an inkjet printer that prints down your pixels that are going to start emitting your light.
Wow.
And this means that you can suddenly have a much quicker turnaround of how you're creating these devices, which starts to mean that your production costs come down, the infrastructure you need is much lower, and this means that places that don't have the same resources as we have at the moment to make this technology can start making TVs. So one thing that I was reading about that's being used is over in Africa, where you don't have this technological resources. They've started making organic solar cells to go on the roofs of places in Africa where they don't have main grid electricity. And because you don't need as high a investment cost at the beginning, you don't need the resources, you're able to do things like that. Also, the applications of having something which is flexible, you can also make these electronics stretchy, is immense. There's loads of different applications.
Have, like elastic band type electronics.
Yes, yeah, and they're cheap as well. And if you think about elastic band type electronics, flexible electronics, one thing that they're doing, there's a group in Stanford that are doing this quite well, and that's they're making tactile skin for prosthetics. So that would mean...
What does that mean?
That means... So say, unfortunately, you've had to have your leg amputated and you have a prosthetic, so a false leg, that you start to walk with. Now you can create an electronic membrane that can cover that can actually feel the sensation of touch. And this group in Stanford, what they've done is they've also been able to make this material so the electronic signal that it produces can actually interact with your nervous system. So now, not only
you could become like Darth Vader and actually have like a bionic arm that melds into your nerves and has sensations.
Yeah, so at the moment they've only been able to create sensations that can go into your nervous system. But with this technology, so the idea of organics is also that it's biocompatible. We're made of hydrogen and carbon, so the idea that it can interface with your body is not ridiculous. And they've proved this at Stanford, where they've created the electrical signal that you can feel. And then you can imagine now it's actually not going to take that long before we go the opposite way around, where we can create organic electronics that can understand our neuron signals. So if you want your prosthetic arm to move, it's not out of the realms of possibility that we're going to get there, where you can tell this arm how to move by using organic electronics to interface with your body.
That's so exciting. Oh my God. Wow. And so just to bring it back to what you do, you are looking at these materials that are being used in these new ways, and you're discovering their properties in order to work out how they can be used.
Yes, so I fire lasers at things, and by looking at that, we look at how the different electrical energy levels within the material, where they sit, and that tells us, for things like TV screens, what colour are they going to be emitting? So if I know what colour this material emits, perhaps it's not quite the right colour that I want, what I can do is I'll take this molecule that I've been looking at, so that's the material I've been looking at, and I'll go across the road to the chemistry department at UCL and I'll say, oh, this is really interesting, this has almost exactly the properties I want, but not quite. And I'll say, can you just stick an extra hydrogen bond on here or something? Or,
no
or
way.
Just change this, and that'll change the property.
They're actually just going to, like, tweak your molecule.
Yeah.
And then it will do what you want it to do.
Yeah. So we've got synthetic chemists and chemical engineers, and that's exactly what they do. They go and their job and what they're really interested in is, how can I tweak this molecule to get the properties that this guy wants? And then they'll give it back to me and I'll look at it and I'll say, brilliant, what you've done there has created exactly what I want. And then I'll go to the company and say, look, we've got this really nice molecule now. Go and stick it in your TV.
That's incredible. Time for your third song. And everyone at home, after this song, we will be making our own spectrometer so you can see for yourself how we get these images and are able to look at these light sources. So make sure you've got your cereal box and your CD ready. Third song, Robert.
Okay, well, great. Third song, I live in Brixton, so I decided I had to pick a David Bowie song because the feeling around Brixton was immense when he died. And although it was a somber occasion, it was so powerful, everyone moving. I decided actually to go for the Queen and Bowie Under Pressure because it's poignant in other parts of my life when I left university and things like that. So I decided that's what I go for, and it's a fun song.
Spectroscopic techniques are extremely sensitive. Single atoms and even different types of the same atom can be detected among 10 to the power of 20. That's a lot of zeros, or more atoms of a different species.
That is a lot of zeros.
Put it in context there.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Science Mixtape on Soho Radio. Joining us this week is Dr. Robert Thompson, and we are about to make a DIY spectrometer. Spectrometer? Yes.
Yes, yeah, spectrometer.
Okay, so I'm fully equipped. I have my Bran Flakes cereal box and my CD. And Robert has actually amazingly created a diagram, which we have tweeted, because it might help to have some visuals while we explain what to do. Now, I've got my box. What do I do next?
Okay, so the main part of the equipment that we're going to use that's going to actually turn this into a spectrometer is a CD. So we need to make sure we put that in that right level. So what you want to do is you want to cut a slit. It can go anywhere up and down your box, but what's important is that it lies at 30 degrees off the bottom of your box. Now, on the diagram I've put, because not many people have protractors at home, I've shown you what lengths that is that you need to cut it at. But essentially all you're doing is you're creating a slit to slide your CD in that it's sitting at an angle inside your box, and that angle wants to be 30 degrees, just below 45 degrees. So we can hear you cutting over there.
There we go. And am I cutting the same on both sides?
Yes, yeah. So if you cut the same on both sides, so you can actually slide your CD in. If you imagine at school when you used to make periscopes and you cut a little slit to put a mirror in, essentially you're doing the same thing.
Okay.
And then what we're going to do is we're going to slide our CD, and you want to slide your CD so that the shiny side that reflects is pointing up. I'd probably make sure it's a CD you don't want to listen to anymore because you might scratch it when you push it into the box.
Yeah, don't worry. I've got some great retro tunes that I do not need anymore on this.
I've gone for Simply Karma Meditation.
I think this is a Now compilation. Now 45.
No.
Okay, so I've cut my slit, and I'm just sliding my CD in. And why are we using a CD?
So the reason we're using a CD is because the way CDs work is that they have lots and lots of tiny grooves on them. And in science, we would call that a diffraction grating. And what that means is that when light hits a diffraction grating, it's going to split into all its different components. Because unlike a mirror, which reflects all the light back at you at essentially the same angle, a diffraction grating is going to reflect red light back at a different angle to blue light. So when you look at it...
So it splits that white light.
It splits light, yeah. Exactly as if you imagine the Pink Floyd album cover, they had the prism on the front, which split the light. This is doing the same thing using the CD.
Amazing. Okay, so my CD's in place. What do I do next?
Okay, so the next thing you want to do is you want to cut a window which can look in at your CD. So essentially, if you look at where you've cut your CD, go across to the edge of the box and cut a window here.
So directly opposite.
Directly opposite,
look through that window.
You should be able to see your CD.
Because, listeners, I actually have already cut it. So I can see my CD through my window.
And then the final cut that we need to make it into a spectrometer, is you want to make a very fine cut directly above the CD. Now, the finer this cut is, the better your spectrometer is going to work and give you finer lines. So I've actually done a little bit of a cheat, and what I've done is I've made a window up there and then covered it in tinfoil. And that tinfoil, then, you can create a very, very fine slit inside the tinfoil to make it. How are we doing over there?
Yeah, I think I'm done. I'm ready to try it out.
Excellent. Okay, so all you need to do now is point it at a different light source.
So what have we got here in the studio?
So what we've got in here in the studio, the first thing I've got here, which is easy for us to access, I've got this big, bright light. And the lamp inside this light, so the bulb, is the same as your old-school, non-energy-efficient
type of light bulb. Tungsten light bulb,
And the way that works is it heats it up, and then it emits a big, broad, white spectrum, the same as you'd kind of see coming from the sun. So what you should see if we put this above is a rainbow, a complete rainbow with no different lines in it. So
let's have a look.
That's my wine glasses going on over the place. So if I pass you that and you hold that above the slit, can you...
That's amazing. Yeah, I can see all the colours of the rainbow very, very clearly and sort of a nice stripe.
But it's the main thing to look at is it's continuous, isn't it? You've got no discrete specific lines in there.
No, no gaps.
No gaps. Okay. Now, the difference would be is if you were to take that into your office, the fluorescent type tubes, the way that they work is that the inside of that tube's covered in a powder of molecules and atoms, and those molecules and atoms have specific wavelengths that they emit light at, which are their transition energies. So if you were to look at those lights using your spectrometer, what you'd see is very defined lines. Which correspond to the molecular transitions in those materials.
And we have one, we do have a fluorescent light.
So we've got the neon lights out here, yeah. So what we'll do is I guess we'll have a look at the neon lights.
Yeah, let's go.
Should we go now?
We have a microphone on an extra long cable. This is going to be great. Okay, here we go.
Okay, so I'm stepping outside the studio and we're here underneath the neon light. Now, if I hold up the slit towards the neon lights, and you have a look in there, you can see that you see
a really clear red line, green line, and blue line, and they're just like really sharp, and then there's not really much in between.
Yes, so that is the transitions of the atoms that you've got inside the neon tubes there that make the colours. Now, what you could do is, what I do at work is, you can actually then work out exactly where those lines are on the grating, where they're projected onto it, and that can tell you exactly what wavelength it is. From that, you can work out exactly what energy they're emitting light at.
That's amazing. So, if you've managed to make your one at home, try it out. Go around your house, find different light sources. What does the sun look like compared to a lamp, or compared to the fluorescent light bulbs, like we said, or even a candle? Robert was saying last night he took it out and looked at the street lamps because they use sodium, which should only be giving you a yellow colour.
Yeah.
So, all to play for. Now, on to our fourth song. What have we got next?
Okay, great. The fourth song that I've gone for is Love Yourself, the Justin Bieber song, but I'm not going to admit on live on air that I like Justin Bieber now.
That's okay. There's been a revolution. We all love Justin Bieber now.
Well,
he's
decided
done very well.
Yeah, okay. Well, I've decided to go for a 1920s cover of Justin Bieber song by the Post Modern Jukebox.
Classy.
Baby, you should know, babe, my mama don't like you and she likes everyone. And I never like to admit that I was wrong. But I've been so caught up in my job, I didn't see what's going on. But now I know I'm better sleeping on my own. Cause if you like the way you look that much, oh baby, you should go.
Microwave spectroscopy was used to discover the so-called 3-degree blackbody radiation, the remnant of the Big Bang from which the universe is thought to have originated.
Mm-hmm. So, we've made our own spectrometers. I was incredibly impressed at how clearly you could see the different lights. But I'm guessing the one you use is a bit more sophisticated than a shoebox.
Yeah, it's a bit more sophisticated than a shoebox.
On a CD.
With a CD. It works in exactly the same way, though. We have a slit that lets the light in. It then hits a diffraction grating. The difference here is the diffraction grating has been made very specifically to make sure there's absolutely no errors in there. And then it reflects it onto, we put a camera there, so instead of putting your eye, we have a very sensitive CCD camera that's cooled to very low temperatures to ensure we don't get any noise in there.
Oh, really? So heat can give noise?
Yeah, so if your camera heat it up, what happens in there is it creates some extra electrons inside the sensor, and that means that you start getting noise. So if you imagine when you take a picture of something that's very dark and you see that speckly, grainy, that's all noise, and we don't want that when we're doing science experiments. So we cool it down to get rid of that speckly, grainy noise that you would see in a photo.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, and so then you get your camera to analyse it, and what are you? Is this material giving off its own light, or are you shining lights at it?
So the experiment that I do at work is I have these crystals, and we grow these really nice, quite attractive looking crystals in the lab next door, and they're these little ruby red type crystals. So we put them down underneath a microscope, and I have a laser that comes in. This is a really high powered laser. Comes in and it illuminates, so we shine it on our crystals, and the crystals absorb the light from that laser. And what happens when it absorbs it, it gets some energy, and that energy moves about within the crystal, and then eventually that energy drops back down to a lower energy level. So it needs to get rid of that energy in some way. And the way that it gets rid of that energy is by emitting light. And we look at the light that comes off, and we direct that into our spectrometer, and we look at what wavelengths are there. So we can work out exactly, if we give it exactly the amount of energy we've pumped in from the laser, then what energies is going to drop down to. And that tells us about the dynamics and the physics and the chemistry and the things that are going on inside our material.
And how it could then be used in an electrical way.
Yeah, because the energy that's being given off will tell us exactly what type of colour it would emit if we had in a TV screen. And it would also tell us things about the amount of current we could get out if we're putting in different wavelengths. How much is it absorbing? What's happening to it? Is it getting trapped somewhere? Because energy can get trapped inside these materials. If you've got a defect in your crystal, then what can happen is you have energy levels that you don't really want to access, and once your electron falls into those energy levels, it can't move out of them very easily. So that energy essentially is wasted and lost, and that leads to inefficient solar cells and things like that.
And you were telling me as well that at the moment the screens that we have, like on our phones or our computers, are really inefficient, because they work by creating light and then filtering which colours come through.
Yeah, so that's the way that some TV screens work now, and your computer screens, is essentially you've got a backlight behind, and then each pixel, so each bit that defines the picture that you're looking at, lets light through by basically opening a little gate or shutting the gate. The way that organic electronics would work, and you do have them in some phones already, they're called AMOLED, which stands for Active Matrix Organic Light Emitting Diode. And you have them, I think, in the Samsung phones. And the way that they work is by every single pixel, which is essentially, you know, a little pack of molecules, you give them a little electric current, and then they turn on, and each pixel emits light. So rather than you having one light source at the back that illuminates your whole phone, you only emit light at the very bits that you want it. So you can imagine, if you're looking at a black picture on your phone, actually most of the light that's behind that screen is being wasted because you're not letting it through. So that's very inefficient. So the way that these AMOLED and these organic LED type displays would work would be that actually those black pixels wouldn't need to be emitting the light, but you'd have more light.
You will have tweaked it to give the red, blue and green colours that we need.
Exactly.
Apple need to be getting on this and sort out their battery life by making their screens more efficient. And we have a little feature that we do with everyone called Fieldwork Faux Pas. So what in your experimenting has been a particularly memorable / terrible moment?
So there's been many terrible moments, but I guess two come to mind. One was, so I work on the 11th floor of this big building in the middle of London. And on the 11th floor, I came back after one weekend to find out we'd had a flood, which only seemed to have affected our laboratory, and it had covered the entire optics table. So I've got this huge table with lenses and things on, covered it in salt water. So everything I was looking at was just the optical transitions of salt, and basically wrote a year of my research off.
The other thing about research, something like that can really derail you.
I had to go off and find something else to do for a year.
Was that someone else's fault, though?
It was definitely someone else's fault, but I think it was probably a culmination of different people who should have been looking after something and weren't looking after
it. So not your faux pas, just
a
terrible situation.
I guess my faux pas would be once I was I should be careful who's listening to this. I was once in the lab directing my laser beam. So we can steer our laser beam around the table using mirrors. And I was making sure to be very safe. It wasn't going to be hitting my eyes. I didn't have any watches on, so it wasn't reflecting into my eyes. But I started to smell something wasn't quite right. And I turned around and it was hitting the big black curtains that we have in the lab. And I was watching them starting to smoke.
No. Oh, my God. Yeah.
That's
like
a cartoon science.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Very, very quickly put what we call a beam block in to stop the beam going anywhere and made sure that I've never done that since.
That's amazing.
Don't play with lasers, kids. Not one to try at home.
Yeah, yeah.
Burn the house down. Yeah. Okay, time for another song, I think. That's fantastic.
Okay, so this song I've decided that I had to go. No matter what club or wherever I go, I always request this song because I think it's fun and everyone, although they might not want to admit it, loves it. So I've gone for Madonna, Like a Prayer.
Part of the show where we bring you the science news from the week. So, Robert, what science news have you brought with you today?
So, mine is that key sugar for life could have formed in space. And this is the news that people have... So, a while ago, people used spectroscopy and they found sugar orbiting young stars.
Actually,
saw the... Yeah, delicious. But that gets quite fascinating when you think about the idea that this sugar is also the backbone for DNA.
Yeah. Pentose is a sugar.
Yeah. So these chemists have created the conditions that would be out in space, and they've seen that if you get these particles of dust that orbit young stars, they then get covered in ice, and the organic compounds that are in the ice that's around the stars, and once it gets hit by the UV light from the young star, it can create ribose, which is in RNA, which could be the precursor to DNA. So this could be how life formed on little grains of stardust.
Oh, wow, that's really cool.
Amazing. Well, that is certainly winning the stakes of the science news at the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
Can you compete?
I don't think I can really compete with that science news. I don't really have much of a scoop, but it's all about how bacteria can kind of play games with the mind, I guess.
Tell me more.
So, bacteria, I kind of like them. They've gone through the ultimate PR turnaround, like from the bad guys causing disease to being now, you know, you eat probiotic yogurts and
good bacteria. Some people are like,
it's all about the healthy gut. The microbiome. Like,
the microbiome, and it's a lot more of a symbiotic relationship than maybe we give it credit for. And so what I read about was an experiment of just a small study, admittedly, of 22 men who reported feeling anxious, being given a bacteria pill every day for a month. And previous animal studies using the same sort of bacteria showed that in anxious mice, don't ask me how you can tell if a mouse is anxious or not, maybe it doesn't want to go to parties or something, but it showed that if they gave them this bacteria, then they became confident. I don't know what a confident mouse looks like, but I guess it's...
Stretched around.
It's
got a swagger.
It's got a groove back. It's a happy mouse. So maybe if this study is in human trials a little bit promising, that it could show that, you know, our gut bacteria is actually affecting our mental state, our mental health.
And it's an alternative to antidepressants.
So you could actually have psychobiotics in the future. So, you know, it could be as frustratingly simple as just changing the...
Changing your diet.
Yeah, changing your diet or maybe...
I mean, people say that already. Your diet can affect your mood as well.
Yeah, it definitely can. So... There's serotonin receptors like in your stomach as well as in your brain.
Really?
Yeah, like a lot. So it's like maybe in different cultures, you know, different organs have different affiliations throughout history.
Yeah.
So maybe we were right in other ways, like, you know, how different organs work together in ways that we don't necessarily know at the moment, and how like bacteria play into that. It's very interesting to see where this sort of study could go in the future. I think it has far-reaching implications if it, you know, gets any traction at all. It's quite interesting.
And, you know, things like follow your gut and having a gut instinct.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
That is, you know, people talk about head and heart, but actually...
Yeah. Maybe there's more going on in the gut as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I've come from somewhere.
Yeah, maybe there's some logic in it.
That is super exciting. Definitely one to watch. So my science news this week is all about a brand new way of making steam from sunlight. So also kind of light related. So it's a new nanomaterial.
Very good.
Yeah, I know. I thought you'd be interested. Made of billions of tiny gold nanoparticles that are fixed on this kind of scaffolding. And when I say tiny, they are less than a billionth of a meter wide. And the material doesn't look gold, despite having all these gold particles in it. It's really, really black because it basically absorbs 99% of visible light and some infrared. So it's reflecting very little back, absorbing all this light. And when the sunlight hits these gold particles, it causes them to vibrate in a way that is termed like they become plasmons. So yeah, they're vibrating in a new energetic way. And this gives off a lot of heat nearby and vaporizes the water, turning it into steam. So just with the power of the sun. And this is exciting because you can like sterilize things, you could get clean water out of dirty water or even out of salt water.
Oh really?
That's and you could power steam engines, you could have any kind of renewable energy type thing that needs a steam to turn a turbine. You could just
stick
it in the sun with all this nano gold. I think it probably has a better name than that. And that's come from Nanjing University in China.
Yeah, lots of super exciting science news today.
Great.
So good.
Robert, what song are we going to have? Oh, no, wait, before we go, I just wanted to say how I first met you, which was in a FameLab competition. For anyone that doesn't know, FameLab is an incredible competition across the UK, actually across the world. There's 27 countries that take part in it now.
30 now, including NASA and CERN.
NASA and CERN have their own.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's a competition for young scientists to talk about any topic that they like for 3 minutes. And they're judged on their content, so how kind of interesting and engaging it is, their charisma, how interesting and engaging they are, and their clarity, how clear they are. And it's a really, really awesome competition, especially to go and watch, because you just get to see loads of great people stand up and talk about really interesting things. You come away having laughed and having learned a lot. And Robert's actually in the UK final.
Yes, we've got the UK grand final coming up on the 25th of this month.
Of April.
Of April, yeah. And it's in a theatre here in London. I can't remember the name of the theatre. But
Bloomsbury?
No, the Bloomsbury's shut at the moment, unfortunately. So it's moved this year. And we're over south of the river by London Bridge. But if you just Google FameLab UK Grand Final, you'll find the details how to get tickets. It's going to be a really entertaining evening. I was away with all the other finalists last weekend, and we've got some amazing different topics that are being discussed. We've got some excellent VIP judges.
Dallas Campbell.
Dallas Campbell's one of the judges, yes, yeah, yeah. So I think it's going to be an excellent evening. And people should, if you're interested in science with a kind of quirky twist, I think people should definitely come. There's a lot of comedic people presenting. It's going to be a great evening.
And you'll get to see Robert in person, which is even cooler. That to look forward to. 25th of April, give it a Google, FameLab. And if you're interested in just learning more about FameLab, all of their past talks are up on YouTube, so you can see those as well. Now, we need
real answer
to give the answer.
Yeah, we did have some contributions. So I've just seen on Twitter that Daniel Axelson has said that surely we can't see ultraviolet or infrared light.
We can't, but those two sit right next to the optical spectrum, so that's just a small amount of what we can't see.
Yeah.
So tell us, what are all the other lights we can't see? And well done to Daniel for getting two. Only one to get two there.
We were talking about before, we can see a complete spectrum, which is the rainbow. The thing is that spectrum goes on so much further than what we can see into loads of other different wavelengths. So we mentioned terahertz, which is a wavelength that we don't look at, but also X-rays, radio waves. Those are all different wavelengths of the electromagnetic spectrum. And
you
essentially,
may remember this from GCSE.
GCSE, but what never seems to sink in at GCSE is this is all light, just different colors
and we can't see.
Our eyes only designed to pick up visible wavelengths, so all of this stuff is light. It's interacts exactly the same, we just can't see it.
You're listening to us on radio waves, and that is a type of light. You're cooking your food with a microwave, that is a type of light. They're all the same electromagnetic spectrum. And now on to the final song of your mixtape.
So the final song I've gone for, one of my favorite places to be is at the end of last weekend of June, is to go to Glastonbury Music Festival, and I absolutely love seeing Florence and the Machine there. So I've gone for, I remember one year actually running from the Florence and the Machine set round to the Pyramid stage to watch Dizzy Rascal, just as Florence and the Machine must have run the same thing that I just ran. She came on and she did this song, and I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Oh, you were there. That's really cool.
That's incredible. Yeah. And without further ado, we now have You've Got the Dirty. Thank you very much for joining us, Robert. And goodbye.
Reflection, city wide, northeast, west, and the south side. Everywhere I go, there's a rune on the corner. Got a search, got a